From the oldies to what's new on your iPod. From the big screen to the little screen. It's everything Saturday night. Now on 77 WABC. Here's Mark Simone.
It's Saturday night in New York City. Mark Simone here, and we're here every Saturday night, 7 until 9. That's the new time, 7 until 9. Big show tonight. Tommy James will be with us this hour, one of the great voices in rock and roll. He's also got an amazing new book and a Broadway musical. Wait to hear about this. And then who was the greatest TV detective of all time? My vote for Columbo. If you're a Columbo fan, be listening. We'll have the creator himself on and a conversation with Peter Falk coming up. Also, the battle of the new releases and more just ahead. And, of course, the message board. You go to musicradio77.com. There's already a whole bunch of great comments up there. My vote for greatest TV detective of all time is Columbo. I don't think it was ever a better series on TV. See, Dave on the message board is already posting, this is a good topic, the most unbelievable detectives of all time. Remember Barnaby Jones with Buddy Ebsen? It's hard to believe. It's pretty embarrassing to get arrested by a 78-year-old senior citizen. All the actresses on Charlie's Angels. It was great to watch, but it was not believable, was it? It wasn't believable as a detective agency. William Conrad, you remember that? Remember William Conrad as Cannon? It was about this big, fat slob detective who was actually in chase scenes. And then let's see, all people are also talking about greatest Columbo clues of all time, greatest Columbo villains, most memorable Columbo scenes. And there are a lot of Columbo questions here. Did they ever actually show his wife? We'll answer all of those questions. And remind me to tell you, about the time I first met Peter Falk, it was an amazing night. And we'll get to that, and I will take your calls. 1-800-848-WABC is the number. 1-800-848-WABC.
Mark Simone, Music Radio, WABC.
77 WABC. Also, the Battle of the New Releases, a pretty good one. Coming up just a little later tonight. Oh, I forgot about this record. This is really good. Remember this? Paul Davis.
Crazy.
forgot what a good record that is. That's Paul Davis on 77 WABC.
WABC.
At 12 minutes after 7. Tommy James coming up in just a few minutes. Tommy James will be with us a little later. We'll get to the greatest TV detective of all time. Let's see Gary writing in. I forgot about these. Policewoman. Remember that? Policewoman. Angie Dickinson as, what was her name? Pepper something. It's some bad ones. Father Dowling. Remember that? Tom Bosley. It wasn't very good. Del Vecchio with Judd Hirsch. I forgot about that one. Gary coming up with these. Madigan with Richard Widmark. Hey, don't forget McLeod. Banachek, one of my favorite ones. Let's take some calls. Let's go to John in Mineola. Hey, John.
Hello, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, what else was I going to do?
I
had to take a call. You were the guy. I got to be honest. Had I known it was you, I might not have taken it.
No,
I'm kidding.
Anyway.
Go ahead.
Greatest Columbo villain, Patrick McGoohan.
No. Not at all. Greatest Columbo villain of all, Robert Culp. They brought him back 4 times. What's his name? The old actor, Ray Milland. They brought him back a couple times. I hated Patrick McGoohan. He was such a gloomy guy. I used to fight with Peter Falk about this. Peter Falk and him were such great friends in real life. He not only kept bringing him, he brought him in as a villain, but he also used him as a director a lot of times on Columbo. I was never...
Yeah, well, they were friends and stuff. One time he was the head of a... military academy who was
but he was so gloomy. He was such a gloomy guy, that Patrick.
Maybe it's a whole English thing.
Yeah, well, it's a matter of taste. All right, John, good call. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Pat in Long Beach. Hey, Pat.
Hi, how are you, Mark?
Good.
I just going back to an earlier topic when you were saying that how pilots had changed around the series.
Yeah, a lot of times the greatest show on TV, if you go watch the original first episode, like Seinfeld or whatever, it's pretty bad.
Right. No, it is. But also, 2.5 Men, in the beginning, they had the boy in there, the son of Charlie Sheen's brother. He was smart in the beginning and making them look like idiots. And now the child is, they have him as like the running gag, is like he's dumber than a rock. But in the beginning, he was showing them all up. He was a really...
No, very, very good point, Pat. As I mentioned before, sometimes they didn't have the formula right. The first Andy Griffith show, Andy played dumb and Don Knotts played smart. You're right, 2.5 Men. The kid was a very precocious little kid in the first episode.
He was.
Very good call, Pat. Let's go to James in New Jersey. James.
Hi, Mark. Kolchak, The Night Stalker.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that show.
You weren't?
Nah.
That was great.
It's not Columbo.
There were a lot of stars in that show, too.
You can't put that in the same category as Columbo. By the way, go to my Facebook page. Look at that Peter Falk video that's up there where he's in character as Columbo at a roast. Let's go to Dave in Pennsylvania. Dave.
Hiya, Mark. I love your show. I used to like Magnum P.I.
That was a pretty good show, and I don't even know if he was even a detective in that. I don't even remember the plots, but that guy, Tom Selleck, driving around in that beautiful car in Hawaii with all those women and those guys he hung out with, that was a great show. He didn't even need to bother with any crime. You know what's really, really, really taken off is Hawaii 5-0, the revival. It's getting huge ratings.
I haven't seen it yet, but I guess it will.
Well, go watch it. They got rid of the whole... remember Jack Lord? He was like a real stiff, and he had like 4 fat Hawaiians that worked for him. This new one is really slick. Big, big numbers. Hey, I put this topic up on my Facebook page. You know who actually got some votes? Raymond Burr. Perry Mason. He was a lawyer. He wasn't a detective. And what'd you say in there? You said Matlock. Matlock was a lawyer, not a detective.
Oh, he was great, though.
Yeah, but he wasn't a detective. Well, but I guess that's kind of a related topic.
Well, he kind of did detecting, though.
Yeah, a lot of times Perry Mason would solve the crime. You forget how big Perry Mason was on. That was like on 11 years. There were 2 things in the beginning of television they figured out somehow. That if you did a drama about a detective... or about a lawyer, you'd have yourself a big hit. And Perry Mason kind of set the trend there. So you had a lot of lawyer shows that followed and a lot of detective shows that followed. In fact, I asked Raymond Burr about this once. He was a great guy, Raymond Burr. He played Perry Mason for all those years. In fact, take a listen to this. He's on the line right now, the great actor Raymond Burr. Raymond Burr, how are you?
I'm fine, Mark. How are you?
Wait, I feel like I'm talking to Perry Mason. I just got nervous. I felt like I was on the witness stand there. Did you ever think that Perry Mason would endure like it has? It's been so many years and it's still so
popular.
Well,
when we started Perry Mason, you're asking about when we started Perry Mason.
Yeah.
We didn't know that television was going to endure.
That's a good point. Perry Mason is such a great character, and I think the proof of that is how popular he was in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. It just fits into almost any era, any generation.
Well, it's a good character, and what is interesting about it is the very fact that we're doing a Perry Mason show explains a lot to the public about our system of justice and due process of law. When we went on the air with Perry Mason, it was one of the first of the law shows that went on. A couple of the law shows were just great. The Defenders was a great show. And up to then, a lot of people in this country, a surprising amount, didn't know what their court system consisted of and didn't know about due process and didn't know that they, as an ordinary citizen or as a citizen who was poor or who had, was part of the race problems, could indeed have their day in court and have it fairly.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because it's true. A lot of people now know everything about a court and how a trial, all because of all these shows like Law and Order and all that stuff. Well, we'll get back to the topic of greatest TV detective of all time. That's actually the topic for the second hour. We'll get to that then. But coming up next, Tommy James, one of the great voices in rock and roll, a guy with zillions and zillions of records sold, a lot of hit records, and he's written a new book. It's unbelievable, this book. You know, the mob controlled a lot of the music business, a lot of the record companies. So he's kind of exposed all this because a lot of these guys are dead now. And the book is unbelievable. It's already going to be a movie, a major Broadway musical. It could be the next Jersey Boys. And we'll hear all about that next. This portion of the program brought to you by New York Community Bank and the NYCB family of banks, where you always get more. Visit them at nycbfamily.com.
Mark Simone.
Hey, let me ask you a question. If you got those brown spots on your skin, if it drives you crazy, you know, they call them liver spots. It just sounds awful. It looks awful. You can do something about it. There's a plastic surgeon here in New York City, Dr. Arthur Perry. We know him. He's been on WABC. He's a good guy. And he's made a cream called Night Skin. His patients are raving about it. You just use Night Skin every night. It'll help fade those liver spots from view. It's made to reduce the look of those brown spots. And that's not all. It helps stimulate collagen production. You don't need to visit Dr. Perry. You don't even have to do that for Night Skin. You can get a 30-day supply for free by calling New Vitality. And this is only while supplies last, so call right now and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply of Night Skin. Call 1-800-607-6962 and find out how you can get a 30-day supply. Call 1-800-607-6962. 1-800-607-6962.
From the oldies to what's new on your iPod. From the big screen to the little screen. It's everything Saturday night. Now on 77 WABC. Here's Mark Simone.
Mark Simone, Music Radio. W-A-B-C.
Well, in just a second, we're going to talk to Tommy James. Well, he's got an amazing new book out, a movie, a musical, Broadway music, a lot of stuff happening. We'll talk to him in just a moment. But Tommy James, one of the great recording artists of all time, but what a great live performer. In fact, let's go to a small club and hear Tommy James live in concert. Take a listen.
People are changing. Hey, it's beautiful.
One of the great recording artists, that's Tommy James. On 77, Mark Simone here, and Tommy James here as well. We've got him on the line right now. One of the great recording artists, got an amazing new book out, and what a story it is. And it's great to have him with us. Tommy James, how are you?
How are you? It's great to talk with you.
Very good. So tonight, the big night, House of Blues.
It is. We're actually backstage and here in Atlantic City, and... you know, we found a nice quiet corner, so this is all right.
Hey, you are one of the great live performers. We played a recording of yours. You know, a lot of artists, they get out there and live, it's not, it doesn't sound like the recording, it's not as good. You are great live.
Well, thank you so much. That's really good of you to say. I appreciate that. We take a lot of pains to not mess with the records too much, you know. It's actually kind of hard to keep from souping them up.
Yeah.
And we try very hard. Very hard to keep it honest.
But like Crystal Blue Persuasion, I would never think you could recreate that live, all the sounds, the arrangement, but you did.
Well, you know, it's hard. We really work at it. We basically take great pains to keep the thing in the same key and all the vocals just the same and everything. It's important. I know that's the way I feel when I hear other people do their hits.
Yeah. We're talking with Tommy James. They got that thing now called Auto-Tune.
Auto-Tune, right. Never have to sing a flat note in your life again.
It'll electronically correct your voice so it's perfect. And they criticize some artists for using it, but I think you should pass a law that every artist has to use it.
Well, yeah, it should be etched in stone, right?
Well, why not?
Well, you can sometimes hear it. I always get a kick out of when you can hear it. Sometimes... an artist wants you to hear the auto-tune, but usually they don't. So it's a little trick, and it's very helpful. So we use it in the studio now.
Well, what do you mean you can hear it? You mean it has sometimes this like digital?
Yeah, sometimes it sounds just like a guitar hitting the right note, and you just hit a guitar. Sometimes it really sounds a little phony, but. Usually it sounds pretty good. It's one of those amazing new inventions that's got to be kept in its place.
Yeah. Now, Tommy James, when you went into the studio in the 60s, especially like Crimson and Clover and all of that, you didn't have all the technology to do that. It's amazing.
No, that's true enough. We had to, you know, if you wanted to do something electronic, you had to basically build the circuits to do it. You know? Plus the fact that, that's why it was so much fun, always stretching and figuring out new ways to use technology.
No. Hey, the good news is you're going to be at Westbury October 16th.
That's right. We'll be at Westbury October. And we're really looking forward to that because the Long Island crowd is really great. They're a lot like the Jersey crowd, you know. They're very they're edgy. They're a little louder than most crowds. And they're very loyal.
Yeah. Westbury's a wonderful landmark of a place.
And I love it out there. We're also going to be October 8th. We're going to be at the Sands Casino out in Bethlehem, PA. It's in the New York driving area, so I mention it. You know, we've been very lucky. I like, especially towards the end of the year, to be able to play dates sort of in the tri-state area. I like to be able to do that because... I'm not real keen on getting on airplanes in snowstorms.
That's true. We think of the glamorous life of the rock star.
No. I like to be able to hoof it to wherever I'm going when the snow's coming down.
Yeah, but you're right. A lot of hotels, a lot of airports.
It's unpredictable. When you leave your house in the winter, you never really know if you're coming back.
Well, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's true. And with the scheduling today and all this stuff, so the summer isn't too bad. I mean, it's not like it's going to be bad weather or anything, but I really enjoy playing around the New York area because that's where I live and that's where the action is.
Yeah. So October 16th, that's a Saturday night, Tommy James will be at Westbury, and then October 8th at the Sands.
Right.
That's an amazing place, the Sands Casino now.
You know, I've never worked there. It's going to be fun. They've got it really is a...
But just so people know, it's not Atlantic City. This is Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Right, but it's amazing. It's one of those places where, the town is 16,000 and 30,000 people show up. So it's really kind of amazing. I'm really glad to play around the area towards the end of the year. I've never played the Sands, and it's going to be fun. I love playing PA, too. the PA crowds are a little different than Jersey crowds, but they're very loyal too.
Yeah, but what are you going to say? You're on the radio. You're not going to say, "I hate playing Cleveland. Those people stink."
After a while, the fans kind of become like extended family.
Yeah,
and you have people in every region of the country who, you know, always show up. And it's great. I mean, because there's three generations of them now. So I love playing out.
Yeah, and you should always see, you should see Tommy James, because one of the few acts where it's as good, if not better, live than the recordings.
That's really good of you to say. You know, I have the Shondells, the original Shondells, not the group that I'm on the road with, but the original Shondells from Pittsburgh that were with me the first 5-6 years at Roulette we're now back in the studio again.
Wow.
And we're making music for the new movie.
Okay, now the book, The Mob, The Music.
Me, The Mob, and The Music, yes.
Me, The Mob, and The Music. This is a big bestseller. You got to read this book. It's a riveting story of Tommy James, rock and roll, The Mob. And what's the deal with the movie?
Well, we have as soon as we were out on through Simon & Schuster with the book, we started getting calls for the movie rights and then the Broadway rights. And the movie is going to be... if all goes to plan, according to plan, it'll be out in roughly 2 years with Barry Rosen and Mary Gleason as the executive producers. And then the play, the Broadway show is going to be produced by the Niederlander family.
And wow, that's the biggest.
Barry Rosen, the Niederlanders, who pretty much own Broadway.
Yeah, you can't get any bigger than that.
No, and they have been just great with us. They... what's so great about having the Niederlanders involved in the production is that there's so many hoops you don't have to worry about going through.
Yeah.
And I just, I've never done any of this before. I've never been an author before, so this is all new to me, and I'm getting a heck of an education. But it looks like the play is going to be out just slightly ahead of the movie.
Wow. So, you know, ever since Jersey Boys, everybody in rock and roll, every performer has said, my songs, my story, this is going to be the next Jersey Boys, and none of them have been able to pull it off. You'll be the next one.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I'm going to give Frankie Valli a big hug the next time I see him. You know, I've known him for years. Before Jersey Boys, what they called jukebox musicals were really kind of looked down upon on Broadway.
Yeah.
And a lot of them didn't do all that great, and so they were, you know, iffy at best. They sort of turned into a glorified rock concert. And after Jersey Boys, all that changed, and Jersey Boys was such a monster all over the world. You know, it's been released in other countries now. It's just, it's huge. And if we do a tenth of the business Jersey Boys did, I'll be very happy. But the point is that suddenly, rock musicals and the stories that went with them took on a whole new meaning after Jersey Boys.
Well, because, you know, everyone wants musicals on Broadway, and you can't do the old Gershwin, Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff, and then Andrew Lloyd Webber kind of stuff was basically a hybrid, so now you might as well just go with the real rock and roll.
Well, that's true enough. There must be a good story to go with it, too, and I think that's for... Although, you know, I was so fortunate. We played last week in Morristown, New Jersey. And Jeff Davis, the producer of Rock of Ages, that's such a smash, came and said hello. He came to the concert, and we got a chance to talk. And Rock of Ages is one of those shows also that just really the music is bam, 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 you know. And so I'm actually going to go see it. I'm going to go see a whole bunch of musicals on Broadway right now to kind of get ready to be a consultant for our show.
Well, this is great. So, Tommy James, whenever you read the book, Me, the Mob, and the Music, and then the Broadway musical, you see Jersey Boys, read your book. I always thought you rock and roll guys, Frankie Valli, and you just what a wonderful life you had. Never realized all the problems you had with mobsters and this.
Well, the truth is that so much of the music business was in the hands of, you know, real street people. That's how it started out. Now, that's good and bad. I mean, you know, you look at how a lot of people think that Vegas was a lot better when the mob controlled it.
Yeah.
But, truthfully, that's the way it was, especially back in the early days, the 50s and 60s, that, Roulette Records, of course, was ground zero for all that stuff, and very few people knew that what Roulette was. You know, it was not only a functioning record company, but it was a front for the Genovese crime family in New York. And of course, when we signed, none of us knew that. Of course, we had to learn it. You know, as we met, you know, guys with bent noses and nicknames.
Yeah, but all of us kids buying these records, we just imagine the people running that was just a bunch of carefree hippies.
Sure. Right. Well, you know, and they controlled the jukebox business, too.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm telling you, it was quite an experience. And, of course, I couldn't tell any of this until now. I really was very uncomfortable until the Roulette regulars sort of passed on because... you know, I've been waiting a long time to tell this story.
Yeah, well, what a story it is. So everybody should read the book, Me, the Mob, and the Music. It's an amazing story. And then, of course, everybody should go see Tommy James, October 16th, Saturday night, Westbury Music Fair.
And of course, I guess you can't be there tonight. If you're not here tonight, you're way too late for this one.
You'd have to drive very fast.
And October 8th out at the Sands. By the way, I'm writing a new song for... the Morris Levy character in the play.
That's the mob guy. The big.
Yeah. And he's going to have a song that's kind of a trashy rap song called One Hell of a Ride, which is the subtitle of the book.
Oh, wow.
And so that's going to be his song. So this is going to be a very fun project.
Well, careful on that song, because Morris may have relatives out there.
Yeah, I know what you mean. He definitely does.
Let's tone it down a little in that song.
I'll be very careful.
All right. Well, Tommy James, what a great career. And again, everybody should get the book. And don't forget to see Tommy James, Westbury, October 16th, Sands in Bethlehem, October 8th. And thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's great talking with you, Mark.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Mark Simone, 77 WABC.
Well, it's Saturday night. Mark Simone here. Every Saturday night, 7 until 9. We've got a lot coming up. The battle of the new releases. Actually, we just got one tonight, but it's a pretty good one. We'll see what you think of it. And then, let's see, we got Peter Falk, Columbo. We'll talk about the greatest TV detective of all time. Also, the creator of the Columbo series. And a lot more just ahead. Don't forget the message board as you're listening. A lot of good stuff up there tonight. You go to musicradio77.com, and there's a link right there to the Saturday night message board, musicradio77.com, or you can call us 1-800-848-WABC.
Mark Simone. Mark Simone. The best music, WABC.
That's Frankie Valli on 77 WABC.
Music Radio WABC.
Hey, it's Saturday night, Mark Simone. Now, coming up, a look at the greatest TV detective of all time. What do you think is the, who do you think was the greatest TV detective of all time? We'll get to that in the next hour. Let's take a call or two. Let's go to Robert in New Jersey. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good.
Okay, how about Rockford? Rockford Files.
Yeah, Rockford Files was a pretty good show. I can't say it was my favorite TV detective. But, it, you know, it's interesting. The guy that wrote all those Rockford Files was David Chase, the guy that wrote The Sopranos.
I knew that. Actually, who played Rockford's father on the show?
No, I don't remember. The old guy, I don't remember his name.
Yeah, Noah Berry.
Noah Berry. I don't think I ever knew that.
Okay, one more if I could. Okay, Petrocelli?
Petrocelli? Who was in that?
Actually, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was a popular actor in the day.
Well, how popular could he be if you can't remember the guy's name? Like four people in the control room looking. No, they can't remember his name.
Petrocelli, and he had a beautiful wife, blonde hair.
Well, how good was this guy? Nobody can remember his name.
Mark, help me out here.
Petrocelli. You know what? It's not even something you want to Google. I'd have to sit there and figure out how to spell Petrocelli.
Yeah, I tried doing it, and I just gave up.
Yeah.
He played for the Red Sox?
No, that's Rico Petrocelli.
Yes, I remember that, too.
See, him we remember. Rico Petrocelli. No, nobody's ever forgotten the name. This Petrocelli guy. Now, one person can remember this guy's name.
Really?
Anyway, thanks for calling, Robert.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much.
All right, it's time for the battle of the new releases. Usually we have two against each other, but we don't have two. But we'll still do it because we have one, and the way this works is you rate the record.
It's not really a great battle we got going on.
Well, no, it's a battle between the recording and the audience. You tell me if it's a good recording or not. This is actually a pretty interesting thing. It has real significance to it because it's Brian Wilson, the genius, the guy behind the Beach Boys. Oh, Barry Newman was Petrocelli. Let's see. Wait a minute. Michelle knows that. Michelle? Michelle's not listening, but it was Barry Newman. That's right. You know what? I still nobody cares. He was a big star back then, but nobody cares. Anyway. Brian Wilson, genius in the recording studio, performer, genius as a producer, arranger, puts together all those great Beach Boy albums from Smile to Pet Sounds. I mean, an absolute genius. Of course, a little nuts and a little crazy and has all kinds of problems in his life and career, but he's got a brand new album. It's pretty good. It's a real, you tell me if this is pretty good. Now, this is an interesting concept. He does an album of Gershwin songs, the old Gershwin standards, but he does them in a Beach Boys kind of style because apparently he loved that Gershwin music, the great standards by Gershwin. However, now this one is interesting, and this seems to be emerging as the single from the album. Gershwin apparently had a couple of unfinished songs that he had started, never finished. Brian Wilson made a deal with the Gershwin estate to take the unfinished songs and finish them. So here's one of them. Gershwin wrote half of this and Brian Wilson the other half. And this is Brian Wilson's brand new recording called Nothing But Love. Brian Wilson and George Gershwin wrote this song. Take a listen and let us know what you think of this brand new release.
Mark Simone.
So put it up on the message board or call us, 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-WABC.
She's got a way of easing my mind. Looks in my eyes and everything's fine. We can laugh without any words. My smile is hers. She shows me the art of how to use time. Lets me believe. But most of all, there will be love.
Well, there you go. There's Brian Wilson, and that is from his brand new album, Nothing But Love. It's interesting. It says Gershwin half wrote the song, never finished it. Brian Wilson finishes. This is the new single from the new Brian Wilson album. Let's find out what people thought. Pete, what did you think of it? Pete, are you there? No, let me see. Let's go to line two. What did you think?
I just want to mention that I believe Petrocelli was George Peppard.
No, not at all. Let's go to line one. Pete, what did you think?
I was thinking, I thought it was pretty good. I liked it.
Yeah?
What do you think?
Started off great. I don't know, got a little boring after a while.
Anyway, I wanted to mention Beretta also.
Oh, that's right. Great Robert Blake, a nutty Robert Blake. That was a great show, Beretta. Let's go to Ron. Ron, what did you think of the song?
I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, you know, and this is Brian Wilson, one of the great geniuses in rock and roll history. Maybe he should have quit while he was ahead, kind of a deal.
He should have quit a long time ago. But going back to the detective stories?
Yes.
What Link, you're going to have on?
Yeah.
Ellery Queen.
Yeah, yeah. So another show, he also created the show Ellery Queen. He created a lot of shows, MacLeod,
yeah,
Mannix,
did.
Murder, but She Wrote.
He did that, plus I think the DVDs are coming out next.
Yeah, there's a lot of great shows. By the way, all the Columbos are out on DVD. You should get them. Let's go to line two. What did you think of the song?
I didn't like it at all.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess, again, it's Brian Wilson. Let me see on the message board. Yeah, I guess Maria didn't like it. Let me see. Jim, not crazy about it. All right. I'm afraid he loses out here. And Robert says it sounds like a B-side. I'm looking at all the calls there. Everybody seemed to hate it. So, all right. It's Brian Wilson. We had to give it a shot.
Stick to the Beach Boys.
All right. Yeah. It's one of those where
he still alive?
It's a brand new recording. No, he passed away and then did it. Maybe that was part of the No, of course he's alive, but yeah.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like this Facebook guy. He's 26 years old. He's worth $7 billion. Greatest genius in the world. He created Facebook. Now, look at this. Like 30, 40 years from now, he's going to be 68 and coming up with some new stupid website that doesn't work. And everybody's going to be saying, you should have quit while you were
Mark Simone.
Need to get out more? Mark Simone's here to help. It's Saturday night on 77 WABC.
Well, we got a big hour coming up. One more hour to go. We'll take a look back at the greatest TV detectives of all time. You get to vote. My vote for Columbo, and we'll take a look at that show. A conversation with Peter Falk. Also, we'll talk to the guy who created Columbo and a million other great TV shows. And a lot more just ahead. We've had requests for more KTEL commercials. We'll get to that in the next hour. And, of course, the message board. A lot of good stuff up there tonight. Take a look at it. You go to musicradio77.com. And there's a link right there to the Saturday Night Message Board, musicradio77.com. Or take a look at my Facebook page. There's a great Peter Falk video up there as Columbo. So we'll get to all of that and more coming up right here on Saturday night. Mark Simone here every Saturday night, 7 until 9.
From the oldies to what's new on your iPod. From the big screen to the little screen. It's everything Saturday night. Now on 77 WABC. Here's Mark Simone.
WABC.
The best music on WABC, New York.
Mark Simone.
Seems to be quite enough. Floating around the
Remember that? Ozark Mountain Daredevils and Jackie Blue on 77 Music Radio.
WABC.
At 10 minutes after 8, as Mark Simone here, best TV detective of all time. That's our topic right now. Who was the greatest TV detective of all time? Who was the first big TV detective? Can't remember. I guess it would be Jack Webb, the original Dragnet in the 50s. Then there was Peter Gunn. Remember all those guys? Mr. Lucky, all those. Best TV detective of all time. Let's go to Karen. Karen, who do you think it is? Wait a minute. Let's see. Karen, are you there? No? All right. Let's go to Brian in Queens. Brian.
Hey, Mark. What's going on?
Not much, unfortunately.
Okay. Let's see if I can help you out here. I have two of them. I remember James Franciscus in Longstreet with the
blind. Oh, that's right. Longstreet. He played a blind detective. That's right.
That's kind of crazy, right? And what about Toma? What was that guy's name with the mole on his lip?
Oh, Toma. Robert Massanti, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I used to like Toma, but Longstreet, I mean, as a kid, I liked the show because I liked the dog.
Yeah, don't forget, what's his name there? Ironside. Remember Perry Mason? He was a detective in a wheelchair. Ironside. Let's go to Bill in Bergen County. Hey, Bill.
Yeah, his name is, I don't know the best one, but the first one was probably Ralph Bellamy, who was in a show called Man Against Crime back in the 1940s.
Well, you are an old-timer there, Bill, huh? Crime, the 1940s?
No.
How else would you know that?
I bought a DVD, at the dollar store, and they had this.
That's what happens when you buy those at the dollar store. You get those out-of-copyright old shows that are in the public domain. They put on DVD. Let's go to Anthony in Brooklyn. Anthony.
Hey, Mark. My favorite episode is the one where Columbo, I think it was with Ruth Gordon around 1977.
That was a great Columbo. Ruth Gordon played the old mystery writer.
And he goes into the vault, and he realizes that the light bulb is broken. And he goes to see the light bulb, and then there was a note in the light bulb that says, "I was killed." The name of the book that the uncle had written was "The Night I Was Killed."
No, that was great. Columbo solved it with that clue.
She scratched off the word.
Well, we don't need to go through the whole clue. We got it.
Listen, I'm sorry you're not on the other 2 hours. Come on now, what's going on there?
Well, we're on 7 to 9.
Yeah, it used to be from 4 hours to 3 hours, 2 hours.
I love the way. How about if I went to your job and said, "You know what? You should be on an extra 5 hours."
I knew you were going to say that.
How would you like it if I did that?
I understand. It's a rough day for you, Saturday, but we need you out there for 3 hours.
I'm on 5 hours a day. How much do you want me to work?
I'm going to start a campaign.
Campaign. Take it easy.
You're the best. Take care, champ.
All right. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Juan in New Jersey.
Ron in New Jersey. Very good. Ellery Queen.
Well, you know, William Link, who's coming up, the guy that created Columbo, he also created Ellery Queen.
Yes, he did.
In fact, it just came out on DVD. It's a great show. A lot of people like it. Let's go to MJ, best detective.
Cannon.
Well, that was Robert Conrad. He played a big, fat detective.
Yeah, but he was pretty good. You know, he wasn't the legend's horse guy, but he was good.
I know, but a detective. And that, remember that show he had to chase the bad guy? He's like a 400-pound guy trying to chase somebody.
Jeez, I mean, maybe she don't wear Weight Watchers.
Yeah, there you go. All right, one more call. Let's go to Tony in Brooklyn. Tony.
Yeah, I Spy.
I Spy. What a great show that was. Bill Cosby and Robert Culp. I noticed they just put all the I Spy episodes on Hulu if you want to see them.
Oh.
All right, well, thanks for calling. My vote, absolutely, without question. I wouldn't even have to think about this. My vote would be for Columbo. Played by Peter Fox, single greatest detective show ever. We'll meet the creator of Columbo in a few minutes, but many of you may know Peter Fox, a good friend of mine for many years, and he was a very regular guest on my show, especially the Saturday morning show, but he's not well anymore. He's got all kinds of problems, and he can't do an interview anymore, so we're going to actually replay an older one and just go back. That is one where I asked him a few Columbo questions. You remember Columbo, of course, was probably about the biggest show in television in the 70s. And then it went off the air for a lot of years. And then ABC brought it back in the 90s and actually into the 21st century. There were new Columbos on ABC. So this was the last Columbo was on the air. And it was on ABC. This is like late 90s, early 2000s. And it got a big review in the New York Times that day. So here's a little conversation with Peter Falk the night the new Columbo was going on. And we talk about some Columbo stuff. Take a listen. Peter Falk, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
Very good. You know, I was just reading the New York Times. You've got a heck of a write-up in today's New York Times.
It's just terrific, isn't it?
Wow. A rave review from the New York Times.
What section is it?
It's in the C section here.
In the C there?
But then you probably have the L.A. edition.
It's in the B here.
Well, here it's in the C section. See, see, this would have been a Columbo clue.
Right. You know? You know? How do you like that? Now, you knew that in L.A. it's in the B.
You know, I'm getting nervous, like you're about to catch me in a crime.
Well, it was, you know, I was delighted to see it. It's a wonderful, very nice.
What a cast you have tonight. Dabney Coleman, you have Little Richard.
Little Richard came on.
Now, and you have your wife in the show?
And my wife is in the show, too, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. She says it's all nepotism.
But is it, it must be difficult to have to work with your own wife.
Yeah, it is very tough, very tough. But, you know, she's going to do a series, so it's no more nepotism. She's got her own series. Isn't that wonderful?
Wow. Now, but is it hard to, being married to her, to actually offer advice and to be critical when it's your own wife?
I don't talk to her. Crazy. Why would I talk to her? I don't say nothing to her. Who knows?
Has there ever been a time where an actual detective or an actual police force has asked you for help, or you know, a cop that ran into you told you a case?
You know, on every police force, not on every police force, but cops come up to me all the time. You know, we got a Columbo. I don't care where I am. If I'm in Kansas City, they see me. Hey, we got a Columbo on our force, you know. They get a kick out of that.
There's one thing I don't understand about the series.
What?
Columbo always seems to be in a little trouble with his superiors.
Yeah.
But if the guy had these miraculous cases, he brilliantly solves these cases, wouldn't he be the hero of the police force by now?
Yeah, that's true. I can't argue with you on that.
In fact, if a guy really did all these things, wouldn't he have been a superstar and made by the media, and he would have left the force, written 100 books?
He would. But, you know, he lays back. He don't go forward, you know. He don't tell people. He keeps it to himself. Half of the time, he don't even tell them how he solved it.
Hmm. It's a wonderful show, obviously, but also wonderful because here's a cop who's never carried a gun in all these years, let alone fired one or had a violent situation.
Well, they're too noisy. It's bad. It hurts his ears.
Well, we know that's Peter Falk from a while back. There are a lot of great Columbo questions. We'll talk to the man who created the series, and we'll ask him these questions. You know, I was, at the time, the greatest Columbo expert. I was even hired by companies. I was a consultant at Trivial Pursuit. I used to do all this stuff with all this Columbo stuff. And I'll tell you, the first time I met Peter Falk, this was pretty amazing. So here I was, the Columbo expert, and a friend of mine calls me. He ran the Carnegie Deli, which was the legendary delicatessen in New York. So he calls me like about 10:30 at night, and he says, he asked me this Columbo trivia question, the most obscure thing in the world. And I told him the answer. He goes, well, I got a guy here who says that's not the way it happened. And I said, well, he doesn't know. And so I start arguing about it. And he said, well, let me put the guy on the phone. And I said, well, I don't want to talk to the guy. And he puts the guy on the phone, and it's Peter Falk, who I had never met. And we start talking about Columbo. And he said, come on over here right now. He said, how far? I was only a few blocks away. So I go over there. I get there, and he and I sit down and meet for the first time at 11 o'clock at night. We sit down at this table, him and I was there, the manager, a couple other people. And we got up. We sat there at 11 o'clock. We got up at 8 in the morning. It was at a period, I think it was the 80s, where he hadn't done a Columbo in a while. So I started bringing back all these Columbo memories. We discussed every single detail of Columbo, and we sat there for a full 9 hours. And for a million years, he used to tell people about this night, and he always remembered that night because it was like somebody had to debrief him about everything he ever knew about Columbo. He told me everything, where he got the raincoat, in a store on 57th and Park, where he got the car. He found all this stuff himself. He went through the Universal garage and found that Peugeot. Remember the dog? The old dog with the white spots? Apparently the dog died during the show, and they could never find another dog that looked like it. So they had another dog that sort of looked like it, but they had to paint the white spots on it. I mean, millions of Columbo stories. Anyway, the man who created the show, a genius, William Link, will be with us next on 77 WABC. This portion of the program brought to you by New York Community Bank and the NYCB family of banks, where you always get more. Visit them at nycbfamily.com.
Mark Simone.
Hey, if you got those brown spots on your skin, those liver spots, it just sounds terrible, liver spots, and it probably drives you crazy. Well, there is something you can do about it. There's a great plastic surgeon here in New York, Dr. Arthur Perry. He's been on WABC, and he's made a cream called Night Skin. His patients rave about it. You just use Night Skin every night. It'll help fade those liver spots, and it'll reduce the look of those brown spots. Not only that, it helps stimulate collagen production. And you don't have to visit Dr. Perry. You can get Night Skin. You can get a 30-day supply for free by calling New Vitality. Now, this is only while supplies last, and I'll give you the number to call, and you find out how you get a free 30-day supply of Night Skin. Call 1-800-607-6962. Find out how to get a free 30-day supply. Call 1-800-607-6962. 1-800-607-6962.
From the oldies to what's new on your iPod, it's Saturday Night with Mark Simone on 77 WABC.
Mark Simone, WABC.
On 77 Music Radio WABC.
It just stopped there. WABC.
That weird CD player just stops with 10 seconds left on the recording there. Well, we'll meet a genius in just a second. The greatest TV detective of all time. Oh, here's Rob voting for Mannix. Nah, Mannix is kind of an ordinary show. Columbo is something very special. A couple people on the message board. Jim says, but when Mark was talking to Peter Falk, he sounded like Columbo. That's one thing about Peter Falk. He was Columbo in real life. He dressed like that. He talked like that. He walked like that. All that same stuff he did in real life. When you'd be with Peter Falk, he'd get up to start to walk away and go, oh, one more thing. And he'd come back. He did all of that stuff. It still gets my vote. Greatest TV series ever.
Mark Simone, WABC.
All right, you're an expert on TV theme songs. See if you recognize this TV theme song. 1970s. Well, that was actually the theme from the NBC Mystery Movies. Remember, that was the series that had Macmillan and Wife and Columbo and all of that in it. Speaking of which, on the line is an absolute genius, one of the great writers, creators, one of the great TV producers of all time. This is the guy that came up with Murder, She Wrote, Mannix, McCloud, The Bold Ones, The Cosby Mysteries, and he is the creator of Columbo. And I just think one of the greatest guys ever in television, and he's on the line right now. William Link, how you doing?
Very good.
Well, you are, I just can't tell you how great you are. I mean,
pour it on.
Well, let's see. First of all, you create, I think, the greatest television show ever, Columbo. Not to mention Murder, She Wrote, and Ellery Queen, and Mannix, and you created McCloud, too, right?
Yep.
McCloud I loved, and... I mean, were you just born this brilliant thinker, writer, creator?
All I know is I started writing or making up stories when I was 4 years old. I remember telling my older cousin a ghost story.
Yeah.
But I always liked to tell stories. I used to tell them at an assembly every Friday morning in grade school. I would tell a story to the whole school. And it's in my blood. I don't know where it came from, but it's there. Praise the Lord.
Now, you, William Link, with your partner, Richard Levinson, you go to work for Hitchcock for a while. That must have been great training.
Oh, yeah. Well, we published short stories in the Hitchcock magazine, and then we adapted some of them for Hitchcock's half-hour show, and then it went to an hour, and we wrote, I don't know, 10 or a dozen shows for the Hitchcock Hour.
Yeah.
But that was a great experience.
So what did Hitchcock teach you? What kind of things would he... tell you?
We had already formed our writing style before Hitchcock.
Yeah.
We had a three-hour lunch with the great master, and that was fabulous. We asked him a lot of questions. You know, he had pre-digested answers because he'd done so many interviews. But we asked him stuff that he hadn't been asked before, so he knew we were really fans who knew his career. And it was just fascinating.
Wow. Hey, you guys, you wrote that episode, the one about the guy driving with the body in his trunk and the cop pulls him over. Wasn't that you? You guys?
Yes.
You don't even remember it, but it stuck with me forever.
That's a while back, yes.
I could never get that out of my head, but with the taillight, you remember?
Oh, yeah. That was on Columbo, I believe.
Well, you actually you brought it back into a Columbo scene, but originally it had been a Hitchcock episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Aren't you glad you called me so I could explain your career to
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Explain my career to me.
So, now, let's take Mannix. Mannix was a very popular show, but that was pretty much a straightforward kind of show.
Yeah, it was a private detective. We were practically kids when we sold out. It was a big hit. It ran for 8 years on CBS with a terrific actor, Mike Connors,
yeah,
who I believe is still with us. Very, very nice guy. And that was when, you know, we were still getting everything together, Dick and I.
Yeah.
And it was great that it was, you know, our first effort was a hit. And we went on from there. We went to Universal. And that was really the most creative times of our life. I wound up staying there 25 years after Dick had passed on.
Mm.
And that was just a terrific experience because anything we wanted to do there, they let us do.
Yeah, so then, but William Link, you come up with Columbo, which is so different from any other show. Yeah, I mean, just the idea that you reveal the crime and the criminal and you tell the audience how it was done at the beginning, that must have been tough to sell that.
Actually, it wasn't because we had a lot of big hits before then. And, you know, the networks are whores for people who write big hits.
Yeah.
And what they were worried about, we did two pilots with Columbo. Both were number one in the week that they appeared. So, you know, they wanted it. They first wanted to do, you know, a series, and Peter Falk said no. He'd already had a series that didn't make it. Trials of O'Brien.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't want to get tied down because the series, oh, you've got to work so hard and for so long, the hours. So when the mystery movie came around, he could do six or seven shows just in the summer, and then he'd be free to do anything else, hang out with his friends, do features, et cetera.
Yeah. But it was a few years there before the, from the pilot to getting it on, right?
Just a couple.
Yeah.
Until what they call the mystery wheel came around, where they did like four shows, one week one, the next week another.
Yeah, I think it was McLeod.
Yeah, and yeah.
McMillan and Wife.
McMillan and Wife, and we could never get a hit in that fourth slot of the wheel, of the yeah. fourth although, spoke of the wheel.
Although Banachek should have been a hit.
Yeah, I think Banachek did well. That was a well-produced show.
Yeah, but had you guys been writing it, that would have been a better show.
Well, thank you. But we devoted all our time to Columbo, just as, you know, I've devoted a lot of my time now to writing the Columbo book.
Yeah, we'll talk about the book in a minute. So
yeah.
For those who love Columbo, who miss Columbo, who want more Columbo, there's a new book coming out. It's just wonderful.
It's out.
Oh, it's out already. So everybody yes. should get William Link's book. You've written some Columbo stories.
Right, there are 12 stories. Actually, I've written, I'm working this afternoon on my 32nd Columbo story. These are the first 12 to be published, the Columbo collection. You can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Best is probably Amazon, you save some money. And the Columbo collection it suddenly occurred to me, you know, I've been writing all these crime stories that were published over the years after Dick passed on. And it's one day I said to me, you know, you're a fool. You should be writing the most popular character Dick and you ever created, namely Columbo. I mean, the original play that it was based on is touring Great Britain as we speak. Then, you know, probably France, Italy, Germany, they're all big Columbo fans still.
Yeah,
and the Japanese are incredible. They had a film crew over here last year interviewing me for an hour and a half about Columbo. It's still like their favorite show in Japan.
Oh, I think it's the greatest dramatic show ever on television. It's just...
Thank you.
So if you love Columbo or if you just love good writing, go out and get the book, The Columbo Collection, with new Columbo stories. Hey, getting back to the TV series for a minute, let me ask you something. The first
sure.
first episode of Columbo, the series, wasn't it directed by this kid named Steven Spielberg?
Correct. He was a kid. He was 21 years old, and we had a hard time selling him to Peter Falk, who said, hey, you know, does he get a cooking, you know, milk and cookies break in the middle of the afternoon? But we showed him a show that Steven had done with Joan Darling. And it was a terrific, like, 5-minute sequence just on the telephone. And Falk was sold. He said, this kid's good. Let's use him. So we were very, very lucky because Spielberg, even in those days, was a genius at directing.
Wow. So you not only created Columbo, you discovered Steven Spielberg.
Yep.
I told you this guy was a genius. This is unbelievable. So, but that character... was so... explain that character, why we love that guy so much. He was brilliant, but yet he was such a disheveled slob and...
Well, he was like an everyman. Didn't care much about, you know, what he wore. That's just like Peter himself. Everybody underestimated his abilities, and I think a lot of American men find the same thing with their wives. They're a lot smarter than they're given credit for. And that's appealing. And women found Peter sexy in that role. But I really think, you know, people could the average person could identify with the Columbo character. I remember the New York Times said, it's like the Columbo character was kidnapped by helicopter from Yankee Stadium and dropped into a murderer's backyard in Brentwood. That's a wealthy area here in L.A.
Yeah.
And that pretty well summed it up. You know, but when we got Peter Falk to play the cop, that was a marriage made in television heaven because it was good on paper, the way we wrote the cop, but Falk made it, you know, extraordinary.
Yeah. Okay, now let me ask you some questions. I've asked Peter Falk these questions. His answers weren't satisfactory. Maybe you can explain this.
Sure.
If this guy solved these amazing crimes, these high-profile crimes, these unbelievable solutions to these crimes, how come after all those years he was still just a lieutenant?
There's no answer to that.
And it's Hollywood. Wouldn't he have had TV coverage? Wouldn't he have become a star? Wouldn't he have had a book deal?
We kept all that out of it.
All right. And one final question, because there's been dispute about this through the years. He never had a first name, did he?
Nope, and never will. In fact, we never gave him one. We also never knew his politics either. We didn't know any of those things about him, and we never really envisioned that wife that you never saw.
Yeah.
It was just Mrs. Columbo, and he always talked about her.
Well, you are a genius, William Link, not only for Columbo, but all those great shows. And everybody should get this new book, The Columbo Collection. And it's a wonderful book of new Columbo stories. You'll just love it.
Yeah, if you love the TV series, you'll love the stories because, but they're all new. None are based on the original series.
Yeah.
Brand new.
It's just a wonderful, wonderful book, The Columbo Collection. Make sure you get it. And William Link, let's do this again sometime.
Beautiful. I'm waiting for a call.
All right. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye. Mark Simone.
What a genius that guy is. Anyway, we got a lot more coming up. It's Saturday night with Mark Simone. We're here every Saturday night, 7 until 9. A lot of good stuff there on the message board. You go to musicradio77.com, and there's a link to the Saturday night message board. Let's see. Robbie is a regular listener in Tokyo. He listens to us every week in Tokyo, and he said, as William Link just mentioned, Columbo is huge in Japan. And he said, Columbo is in every DVD rental shop here in Tokyo. The whole series. The whole series is out on DVD. You can get it there. But it's big all over the world. They just love that show.
Mark Simone. Mark Simone. WABC.
Now, some of you, I know, you're not crazy about that disco era, but there was some good stuff back then. This was a huge hit. Remember this group? Oh, I love this song. Kind of builds and builds and builds.
Show that you know how to do it, do it, do it.
Well, you know what? We'd like to be honest on the program. Honesty is important here. Now that I hear it again after all these years, it's okay. It's not great. It was great back then. I guess you had to be in a club, you know?
WABC.
You had to be there.
Yeah, one of those things. If you were only there, you would understand.
Well, no, you know, sometimes we play like an old song and I go, wow, that's better than I remembered. And sometimes, you know what? That's not as good as I thought it was. But if it were, you know, in the late 70s and that was playing in Studio 54 or something, it was just perfect. So the big thing now with every club is if it's a big hit here, they steal it in Las Vegas. Actually, Studio 54 was the first. And the actually, it was in the 90s. MGM Grand made a big deal to buy the rights to the name Studio 54. They put one out there. And then Tao, of course, when it was the biggest place in New York City. Where's Tao in Las Vegas? Is it the Venetian or where? But there's a Tao out there that is actually, Tao here is on 58th Street. A huge club. But out in Las Vegas, it is the biggest single money-making club in the history of the world. And the same guys have opened Lavo here in New York, which is also going to be in Las Vegas. Marquee is one of the big clubs in New York now.
Yeah, it's at the Venetian.
Oh, it's at the Venetian. Marquee, one of the big clubs in New York. They have just made a deal now. $50 million to open it in Las Vegas. And, you know, it's the one, whatever the club is in New York, it's always a little like in a New York-sized building, you know. But they do it in Las Vegas. It's like 5 billion square feet and always 100 times better. Let's go to Robert in New Jersey. Robert, how you doing?
Hey, Mark, how are you? How about Remington Steel?
Wow, that, who was that? Pierce Brosnan, right?
And
Doris Roberts.
No, actually, it was
the mother on Everybody Loves Raymond played the secretary in Remington Steel.
Yes. Okay, Stephanie's.
Stephanie Powers?
No, Zimbalist.
Stephanie Zimbalist, daughter of Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
Very good, Mark.
All right, calm down. Let me see. Remington Steel. It was okay, but I'll tell you what was wrong with that show.
What?
They wanted Pierce Brosnan to be James Bond, but he could not get out of his Remington Steel contract, so they had to go with Timothy Dalton.
Really?
Yeah, and then a couple years later, when he got free from the contract, they used him. But so he had two or three stinking years of Timothy Dalton, who was the worst James Bond of all. He looked like he needed a protein shake or two, didn't he?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, he was not a good James Bond. And he was also, he had something going on there with Barbara Broccoli, the producer of the series, so... They were very close friends, so that kept them in there too long. All right, well, thanks for calling. Let's see. A lot of people on the message board, a lot of people love Columbo. They loved all the Columbo stuff here. And then look at this. Some people defending Boogie Nights, saying it's a great song, representative of the disco era, and they love the movie. Did they name Columbo Yogurt after the character? No, Columbo Yogurt had been around for years, but when Columbo became a hot show, they started using a Columbo character in the commercials. And if I recall, there was a huge lawsuit that went on forever and ever, Peter Falk suing to get them to stop. There was a period in the 80s where there was no Columbo for years and years and years and years. It came back, as I said, in the 90s on ABC. But I used to spend a lot of time with Peter Falk. We'd argue about Columbo. We actually once wrote a Columbo script together because during that period where there was no Columbo, he had the idea to get it done as a movie. So we actually wrote a script together. I even remember the plot. It was he had become fascinated with Sherlock Holmes, who he believed was the Columbo from another century, and he thought it was interesting to compare the two because Columbo, a lot of the clues were based on technology. You know, Columbo would find something with the phone or the alarm system that was the clue, where Sherlock Holmes had no technology. So we actually came up with a script where the two methods were put up against each other. Needless to say, it never happened. One more call. Let's go to John in New Hyde Park. John.
Yeah, hi, Mark. Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, that was a good show.
How about Moonlighting?
Moonlighting, that was a great show. You're right. What a great detective show. Cybill Shepherd, Bruce Willis became a star in that show.
Yep.
Remember, he had been a bartender in the Upper West Side of New York before that show. All right, you're right. That's a very good answer.
Okay, thank you. Mark Simone.
You know I love him. Ricky Nelson.
I believe for what you say when you say you're going steady with nobody else but me. I believe for what you say when you say you don't kiss nobody else but me. I believe, do believe, I believe, yeah, believe pretty baby. Believe you're going steady with nobody else but me. Well, there's one thing, baby, that I want you to know. When you're rocking with me, don't rock too slow. Move on and get toe-to-toe. We're gonna rock till we can't rock no more. I believe, do believe, I believe. Yeah, believe, pretty baby. Believe you're going steady with nobody else but me. Well, let's dig it now. Well, I believe what you say when you say don't miss nobody else but me. I believe what you say when you say don't kiss nobody else but me. I believe, do believe, I believe. Yeah, believe, pretty baby. Believe you're going steady with nobody else but me. Well, when you kiss me, baby, then you roll your eyes. I get a funny feeling that I'm hypnotized. Chills run all up and down my spine. Everybody that you're mine, all mine. I believe, do believe, yeah, believe. Oh, believe, pretty baby. Believe you're gonna stay with nobody else but me. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I believe, do believe, yeah, believe. Well, believe, pretty baby. Believe you're gonna stay with nobody else but me.
Ricky Nelson on
ABC.
It's that bottom CD player. Wow. What? Is it just haunted? It stops 10 seconds before the end all the time. Hey, you know, we're talking about James Bond. There's a new book coming out. This guy, he was a spy, a British spy. He's claiming that he was the real James Bond, that it was all based on him. Not just a Columbo expert. I'm also a James Bond expert. I just don't think a lot of this is true. Ian Fleming based on, you know, Ian Fleming had been a spy in World War II. And he based it on himself and the spies he worked with. You mean the whole Casino Royale story about the card game? That happened in real life. And Ian Fleming was the guy involved in it. He was the spy that did it. So a lot of this was based on him. But this guy, his name is Biffy Dunderdale, who actually is a British spy, says a lot of it was based on him. Now, he does say one thing that's interesting. The most unrealistic scene ever in any James Bond movie. There are a lot of them. But you remember in Goldfinger where he comes out of the water? He's in the scuba diving in the wetsuit. He gets out and he unzips the wetsuit, and underneath is a tuxedo. Takes off the wetsuit, got a tuxedo, and he walks into the party. Now, let's think about this for a minute. First of all, wouldn't this tuxedo be incredibly rumpled up and wrinkled under that wetsuit? Wouldn't it smell like algae? Let's say it didn't, and he goes into the party. What is he wearing on his feet?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, the shoes.
Yeah, what is he wearing, patent leather fins? It didn't make any sense. So this guy, Dunderdale, says it happened in real life. It was a Dutch spy friend of his who did it. He not only took off the rubber suit and the evening wear was fine, but he said he even splashed Hennessy on himself to make sure that everybody knew he had been partying. He claims it actually happened. Well, this portion of the program brought to you by New York Community Bank and the NYCB family of banks, where you always get more. Visit them at nycbfamily.com.
Mark Simone.
Need to get a life?
We can help.
It's Saturday night with Mark Simone on 77 WABC.
Whoa, we're out of time. Well, this is 2 hours. It just flew by. But you learned a lot of stuff tonight. See, you didn't know that this young kid named Steven Spielberg directed the first Columbo episode. Look how much you learned on tonight's show. We'll be back next Saturday night, 7 until 9. Join the Facebook page, the Mark Simone Facebook page. You'll get all sorts of interesting stuff there. Actually, if you go there now, there's a great Peter Falk video where he does Columbo at a roast. It's actually very funny. And also, don't forget the message board. We check it all week. You go to musicradio77.com, and there's a link to the Saturday Night Message Board. Musicradio77.com. The John Batchelor Show is coming up next. I'll see you next Saturday night right here, 7 until 9 on 77 WABC.